Good afternoon and welcome to the committee, and if you would begin by just introducing yourself for the record, and then you can go ahead and get started.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Cara McNulty, and I'm with the Minnesota Department of Health, and I appreciate the invite to talk with you today. I was asked to come and talk to you about obesity and menu labeling, and so I think that, I mean, we can't open a paper today or read the internet and not look at or hear about our obesity rates. And in Minnesota, it currently is, according to our behavioral risk surveillance survey, 63% of our adults are considered obese or overweight, which is a really staggering number. And when we look at 2004 data of our WIC population, 14% of children ages 2 to 5 are currently overweight. We also know that when children are overweight at a young age, they have a tendency to remain overweight into their adolescence and adulthood. And because of obesity, we also know that obesity really increases it increases our unhealthy diets, our lack of physical activity. It leads to premature death, disability, and high health care costs. And really, high health care costs are incredible when associated with obesity.
Ms. McNulty, let me just interrupt you for one second. We now have a quorum. So can I get a motion to approve the minutes? Okay. Representative Murphy moves to approve the minutes of January 21st, 2009. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No? Okay, the minutes are approved. Thank you. Excuse the interruption and please proceed.
No problem, Madam Chair. Thank you. So when we look at the cost of obesity in Minnesota, a national survey was done, and we looked at the medical costs, indirect costs, absentee, productivity, and in 2004, our overall cost was $1.3 billion to our system. So we know that obesity is really a cost driver in our system. So what can we do? How can we reduce obesity? And one thing that we have to look at is obesity is a multifactorial issue. It's not something that one strategy is going to, we're going to be able to solve obesity with one strategy. And so let's make that really clear, because we're going to talk about one strategy today, but if we could solve it with one strategy, we would have done it a long time ago. So I think people like to make it really simple, boy, less calories in, move more. But how many of us today backed out of our garages, hit the remote control so the garage door goes down? On our way, we might have stopped to get gas. We put our credit card in. We didn't even have to go into the gas station. We whipped through Starbucks to get a cup of coffee and ended up trying to find the closest parking spot to our place of employment. And we've really reduced our movement in society, and we've done it because our lives are so complex and we are trying to fit so much into our days. So society has done a great job in making our lives easier, and in doing so, we are moving so much less. So that eat less, move more, although it's great in thought, it's harder to do than we think. One strategy for looking at obesity and obesity reduction is looking at calorie information at the point of purchase, meaning when you're at a restaurant or at a fast food establishment, being able to see caloric value to what you're ordering. So what is menu labeling? Menu labeling places nutritional information, calories, fat, carbohydrates, sodium, on restaurant menus, on points of purchase, on menu boards, for purchasers to consider at the point of purchase. Why would we even consider menu labeling? And again, this is a possible one strategy in this complex obesity issue. Well, we consider it because a third of the calories that we're consuming are from fast food restaurants. And today, on any given day, 44% of all Americans will eat out. So we're just eating. We're not eating at home as much as we used to. Again, our lives are very fast and structured. And so we're eating on the go.
Can I just interrupt you for one second? Sorry. I just want to ask you, is there a definition of fast food restaurants? A pretty impressive statistic that a third of calories that Americans consume come from fast food restaurants.
There is a definition. I don't have it sitting in front of me, but we can follow up. with that formal definition.
Even if you have sort of the ballpark definition, I mean, are we talking about...
Well, Madam Chair, in this instance, we're talking about fast food outlets such as McDonald's, Burger King, Subway, that are, and in this whole presentation, we're talking about outlets that have 15 more consecutive establishments across the country. So we're looking at places that are In-N-Out, that have all sorts of nutritional options.
Okay, thank you.
So we can look at the increase of our eating out as a nation and consuming foods from fast food restaurants, and we can also look at the increase of obesity, diabetes, and heart disease. Now, is this a co-occurring factor? Is this a correlative factor? It's something that's still being looked at. We already label packaged food. So we already are labeling packaged food in our grocery stores, and we know that people read that packaged food, and people are more likely to make better health choices when they read their food packages. But it's not a slam dunk that that means that they make a better choice. We know they're reading. So nationally, we've had states look at policies that are specific to menu labeling, and states have done very different things. The menu labeling policies that have been passed have been really standardized initiatives. So looking at consistent menu items. So in a McDonald's, what's the average hamburger? What's the average vanilla shake? At Subway, what's the veggie footlong sub with cheese? This isn't, the national policies aren't looking at things that are maybe your specialty items that change. So we're looking at standard measures across McDonald's, Burger King, Hardee's, Applebee's. Typically, these policies are looking at national chains that have 15 more restaurant outlets. So we're not looking at individual small restaurants. We're not looking at a local Mickey's Diner and saying, you know, let's label the calories for Mickey's Diner. So it's looking at large chains. We've had policies passed in California, New York City, Washington, D.C., and some have had legislation and legal issues facing and litigation with their passing of these initiatives. So although it might be common sense to do menu labeling, it definitely brings both sides of an issue to the table and some legal ramifications. Minneapolis recently did a study, and if you read the Star Tribune, you noted that study last week. But that in this study, they looked at 203 restaurants, 118 of which were fast food restaurants, and fewer than half the chain restaurants in Minneapolis provided calorie information on site. Only 10% of the restaurants had calorie information visible in a brochure form, and 26 had calorie information available upon request. So we've talked about what menu labeling is and what it looks like at the national level and at the state level, but let's talk about the business impact as well, because there's definitely a business impact. Policies only apply at the national level thus far to the chain-like restaurants. So again, 15 more outlets. Half of the largest chains already do nutritional analysis, and they post them on websites or maybe within the facility, but not on menu boards or on the menus. They might post it in a kiosk. So we already know that businesses are doing menu analysis. But there is a cost to this for restaurants. So when we look at the cost, one, if we required calorie labeling, let's say at a McDonald's or a Burger King or a Subway, they would need to update all their menus, and they would need to update all their menu boards. So that's the financial cost. We know that if they haven't done analysis of their foods, that it's approximately a $230 price per analysis. So if you're a chain that hasn't done any food analysis and you have a large menu, this can be costly. We also know that menu labeling could curb your ordering or decrease revenue. So I decide every day that I'm going to get a vanilla steak, and then I realize when I look up at the menu board that a vanilla steak is 1,160 calories. And seeing my average calorie intake to be 2,000, I decide, well, maybe I should scale back on my caloric intake with my vanilla steak. I might not choose to buy that vanilla steak. Now, I might choose to buy something else at that restaurant, but I may not. So there definitely can be revenue loss with this initiative. What will it do for the consumer? Well, we assume that if the consumer is informed that they may choose a healthier option. Now, we assume that. I think we all can understand that sometimes we know information and we may choose to do something different. For people with chronic diseases and chronic conditions, it could be very helpful. People with heart disease, diabetes, things of that nature, knowing the caloric values could be helpful. But the one thing we know is even professionals, registered dietitians, nutritionists, it's hard for them to even analyze what would, you know, how much is that Big Mac? What's the caloric value of that Big Mac? So this isn't easy stuff. We know that menu labeling simply offers people information, and menu labeling alone would not be enough. You would have to do provide education with menu labeling, because just giving people information about the number of calories isn't going to do it for us. After New York City implemented their citywide policy to post in fast food outlets the caloric value, they did a large survey, and this is what they heard from their residents, that 86% considered the law a productive and positive move. 75% reported that the nutritional information on the menu had an impact in their ordering, and about 74% thought lower calorie choices. So they still purchased at those outlets, but they thought out lower value or lower caloric intake. So how can this swing back around to address our obesity epidemic? There is no research that menu labeling is going to reduce obesity. There is quite a few studies taking place to make that correlation, but those studies aren't completed. We do know that if we give people information, it's helpful, and if we educate them, it's helpful in their decision-making process. But we don't have evidence at this point that this works. In Los Angeles, the Department of Health there said, you know, if we took 10% of the restaurant patrons and they ate 100 calories less, that 40% of the million pounds gained every year, it would add up to 2.7 million pounds. Well, we know that in that Los Angeles, that 40%, the overall amount is 6.75 million pounds that are being gained a year. And if people ate 100 calories less, it would save 2.7 million pounds. I mean, it's a lot of weight. But again, it's just not that simple. Everybody could, or many people could use to eat 100 calories less, but it's just not that simple. So, in closing, the menu labeling is one option, one strategy. This is not going to change obesity in the state of Minnesota. We can't just do menu labeling. And there are pros and cons for doing menu labeling. I think we've established that. But I do know that if we don't work together with industry, we'll never solve this issue. So if we fight between industry and health, we'll never solve this issue. So we have to figure out a way to do this together so it's a win-win for all consumers.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. McNulty. Do members have questions? Okay, I don't see any questions right now, so thank you very much.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We do have a question. Representative Bond.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. McNulty. Were you referencing, in terms of where this might apply, were you referring to specific legislation that's going to be coming forth that we think we have in terms of how specifically the menu labeling would be applied?
Madam Chair, Representative, no, I wasn't.
Well, Madam Chair and Ms. McNulty, then I assume, I mean, even in the phrase menu labeling, I would think there was a whole variety of ways that could be implemented. And of course, it was interpreted in a very strict manner. I mean, there's reference to change their menus daily.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean, the more up, you know, mm-hmm. places that have, you know, high-end chefs and there's a new menu every night and it's seasonal and all that, they couldn't possibly, you know, test their menu, I mean, items daily, you know, and that kind of thing. So, in terms of the laws passed elsewhere or proposed elsewhere, what sectors would this apply to or not apply to in your experience? What have you observed in terms of how they apply the menu labeling?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Representative, the research that has been done and the policies that have been passed have been on those chain restaurants where there's 14 outlets or 15 outlets or more. It's not on your high-end French Laundry kind of outlets. It's on your Subway, McDonald's, Hardee's.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really looking at the entities that probably or may already be doing food analysis. And it's not even on their specialty menu. So McDonald's brings in the triple cheese with bacon and mustard. It's not even on that. It's on their standard menu.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm a vegetarian. I'm trying to come up with something.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Other questions, members? Okay. Representative Emmer.
I just have a couple, Madam Chair. Do the testifier, whatever we call you, and I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Kara.
What was that?
Kara.
Kara. Sorry about that. How do you propose to deal with, what do we have, how many languages just spoken in the Minneapolis public schools? How do you propose to deal with that if you're going to do this menu labeling? 80?
No, Madam Chair, Representative, I don't have an answer for that. I don't have an answer for that.
Madam Chair, Kara, percentage of the population that's obese, considered obese is what?
63.
And the percentage of the population that smokes is what?
17.
Okay, so this is, we've got a smoking ban, but we haven't addressed food.
Food ban.
What's that?
Food ban.
It's a food ban that we're talking about? All right, thanks.
Well, Representative Emmer, if the sign says cheeseburger and somebody can read that, it's probably okay to say calories in one language.
And Madam Chair, I do appreciate that, but I see all kinds of issues. I mean, perhaps if we go to this food labeling, we can save money in our schools because we won't have to teach the kids how to make the decision. We just have to make sure they can read. And then the labeling can say, just eat one, and as long as you stick to that, you'll probably be good. So I see there's a lot of things that we have to work on with this interesting topic.
Very good. Other questions for members? Representative Bunn.
I just want to make a comment. Is that I do look at, I don't go to fast food restaurants very often, because I have a mostly vegetarian household as well. And there's not much there for them. But when I do, when we have gone over the years, we certainly do look at, I have looked at the information available, and many of them do have it, usually just in one place, you know, on a board or something to the side that shows the different calorie contents. And I find it useful. We generally know that, you know, French fries and hamburgers and those things probably are not, you know, pretty high on calories and fats of various kinds. But what I think has been useful for is, for example, they think the salad offerings there are a good choice, but oftentimes they actually, because of the dressings they provide there and other things on the salads, are even more calories than the hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's been some kind of counterintuitive information that one learns from studying these things that can be useful information who are trying to, you know, need to eat out for some reason and are trying to, you know, stay within some bounds when they do that. So I think it can be useful for people who have issues and are trying to address them.
Thank you. Other questions or comments for members? Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And we have Dr. Ellinger. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and go ahead and give us your presentation.
Representative Liebling, members of the committee. I'm Dr. Ed Ellinger. I'm president of the West Metro Medical Society, which is an organization representing over 4,200 physicians in Hennepin, Anoka, Scott Carver, and Western Dakota counties. So we're representing a large number of physicians who serve a large number of individuals in the state of Minnesota. And over the last several years, physicians have realized that if they focus solely on what they do in their clinical practice, in their office, they're not going to really have as big an impact as they would like on the health of the people that they're serving. They realize that we really need to start focusing on some of the risk factors for disease, and really need to start focusing a lot on disease prevention and not just on treatment. Because of that, physicians have started to look at some of the public health problems in our community, and I think we're doing this as a way to help our communities and help our individual patients. A good example of that is the Freedom to Breathe Act, where physicians starting at the local level took a lead role in getting that legislation passed that really addressed the number one public health problem in our community. And in doing that, physicians found that they could really play a big role in advocating for some policy changes at the local and the state level, which would help keep people healthy. And seeing that important public health policies really had an impact on overall health and of the community and on their patients. We found that good public health policies are good medical care policies, and that they really do a lot to enhance the health of the community. So now we're looking at other initiatives that we can get involved with to improve the health of our patients. And pardon the pun, but one large one stands out, and that's obesity. And I won't go into describing the obesity epidemic. I think you've heard a lot of that, and Kara McNulty pointed out a lot of those, both in terms of the physical health issues and the economic issues. But it is a huge one in our society. But I'm going to just focus on the calorie labeling, which, as Kara pointed out, is one of many initiatives that really could be used to effectively address this issue of obesity. So why calorie labeling? Well, as was pointed out, people eat out a lot. 44% of people eat out on a daily basis. Over 50% of people's food budget now goes into eating out of home. And it's a good public health policy is go where most of the people are. And if people are eating in restaurants, that's a good place for some kind of intervention so you can have an impact. And then when people eat out, they eat a lot more in terms of fat and calories than they do when they eat at home. Portions are higher. Fat content is a lot higher in menu items in restaurants, sit-down restaurants, and in fast food restaurants. And the studies have shown that eating in restaurants has been linked to obesity because of the fact of portion size and increased fat. And it was interesting from national data, but also from local data. My day job is director of Boynton Health Service at the University of Minnesota, and we survey our students. And we have discovered that students eat out a lot, and we found out that the more they eat out, the more obese they are. And as you know, obesity is a risk factor for lots of other health issues. But the other interesting thing is that obesity is also linked to lower grade point average. So maybe we should refer this to the education committee for further discussion. But it has lots of implications. We also know that people don't know very much about the calorie contents of menu items when they eat out. They really do underestimate the amount. They just don't have the information to make good choices. And we also know that people want to make good choices. They want to be good consumers. They want to consider price, taste, convenience, and nutrition in their determining of the value that they're getting for the money that they are spending. Well, they certainly have access to the price. They know the taste, and they know the convenience. What they don't know is the nutritional value. And what they really want to know is the calorie content. Yes, a lot of these other things in terms of sodiums and calcium and fats and trans fats and all those things are important, but I think the bottom line is they really want to know what calories they're taking in. And calorie labeling would give them this information so they could make those choices. And so we also believe that education does work. It does help to change behavior, not by itself, but when it's linked with lots of other things, and we have examples of that. And we see calorie labeling as one form of education. It gives consumers the information that they need to make informed choices so they can determine the value that they are going to you're using their money on. So the West Metro Medical Society, in collaboration with a host of other organizations, are really just now starting to work on this issue in the Minneapolis area, working with the Minneapolis City Council to see if they're interested in implementing a calorie labeling ordinance in the city of Minneapolis. And just today, the Student Health Advisory Committee at the University of Minnesota has also gone on record saying that they really want to start working on calorie labeling at the university so students can learn how to make good choices, and would be supportive of the effort that West Metro Medical Society is doing in the West Metro area in Minneapolis. So we believe it would be a good thing for consumers of restaurant food to have calorie labeling there. And we believe similar ordinances in other jurisdictions would also make a lot of sense. So we think this deserves a lot of consideration from a public health standpoint and from a physical and personal health standpoint. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Ellinger. Questions from members? Dr. Ellinger, we have received a handout in our, and it's labeled IHOP, and I wonder if you would want to walk us through what we're looking at here. Is this something that came from you?
I have not seen it. I'm not sure. I assume that's International House of Pancakes.
Oh.
I don't know whoever brought this.
Okay. That's all right. If it's not something that you're familiar with, obviously you don't need to walk us through it.
But I certainly see that they do have calorie labels on here, and it would certainly add to my understanding of what I'd be purchasing with the dollar that I have.
Well, as I'm looking at this, I'm thinking about Representative Emmer's comment about education and how this might boost math scores. And we have to sit and we can sit and add up what we're going to have in our omelet. But I think we had a question. Representative Tao, did you want to say something?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And do we have some data or some studies to prove that by labeling some certain items that, I don't know, folks will change and make their minds on selecting certain products? Just from personal experience, I work and I'm on the go, and there's a Subway next to a pizza place. I go to one or the other according to my taste, and I do see the calorie label on the Subway, and but I rarely look at it. I chose the Subway because I like the way it tastes more so than the calories, and then I take the pizza because I got sick of Subway, and so. So my question is, by labeling, would that really help the consumer make better choices?
Dr. Ellinger.
Yes. There's a complex question. The labeling of nutrition items in the grocery store has changed some behavior. People do read the labels and make choices based on their health needs, based on what they're finding. Once they determine what their needs are, they don't have to read those labels over and over again because they know that a certain kind of soup or a certain kind of sandwich or whatever meets their needs. In a grocery store where they have a lot more time, you know, they can study those labels and they can read those labels. In a fast food restaurant, one of the nice things is that it's fast. And so what calorie labeling will do would be to write on the menu board to point that out, what that is. There are some studies that are ongoing that are looking at that question. It is early on in the implementation of menu labeling throughout the country, and some studies have shown some change. Some studies have shown that there's no change. It is a little bit too early in the science to be able to say that for sure. Regardless of the science, we believe it's a consumer rights issue of knowing what you're purchasing so that you can make good choices for the money that you're spending. So this is a transparency issue in terms of what you're buying. As I said, we know what the price is, you know how convenient it is, and you know what the taste is, but you don't know what the calorie content is. Those data are mentioned earlier. They may be available, but they may be on a website, or they may be in a pamphlet, which is in the back room. They're not there in a fast food restaurant where you really want to be able to see right away, oh, that's what I, you know, that's how much I'm going to be taking in if I purchase that vanilla shake or that foot-long sub.
Okay, we have a couple more questions. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier, I work in the grocery industry myself, and we've seen a whole evolution in labeling, nutritional labeling, some of it forced by government, some of it not. Frankly, the better parts of it are not forced by government, but forced by consumer demand. And being in the nation that we're in, freedom and all that, these things tend to be driven best and supported best by consumer demand, not by government edicts. So when we don't have good empirical data to support the outcomes, it makes me a little leery about the government stepping in and telling restaurants and others how to label their food. I think a lot of them are doing this already. You see a lot of the restaurants now with the little heart healthy symbol by food items. Some of them are listing the calorie intake. But that's being driven because people want to eat healthier and they're asking for that information and they're responding to that demand, not because government told them to.
The surveys that I've seen have demonstrated that consumers do want calorie labeling. They would like that information. And where it is in place, it is very well received and people get good information from it. I believe that consumer demand is also encouraged by some government policies that show people what's possible. So that when we pass like smoke-free buildings, people recognize, oh, maybe I don't have to be exposed to smoke. Maybe there's a legitimate thing that I can push a little bit farther, so consumers will demand more if they get shown what is possible in the world. So that calorie labeling would give them some information, but would also encourage them to say, I want more. I want different kinds of things in other places.
Okay. Representative Rood has a question.
Well, Mayor Chair, it's actually more of a comment and kind of builds a little bit on what Representative Gottwald just mentioned. I think it's also important to point out, and thank you for holding this hearing today, that this is the place where we can have the public debate. And by putting the policy or, proposing a policy such as this, it allows the public debate and hopefully gets the industry to change, their ways as well. And just the talk of, portion distortion, and consumers are demanding that, but there's a responsibility to bringing all that as to an awareness to the individual. So thank you for holding us today.
Thank you. Other questions or comments? Okay. Thank you very much. Oh, we do. Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Ms. Madam Chair. Again, a comment since we're getting a few personal anecdotes. Again, I just can resist this one because IHOP is my teenager's favorite place to eat breakfast. And I'm presented with this menu, and the family gets, the egg dish plus the hash browns plus the pancakes, the whole works, And when I saw this information, I decided someone of my age would not be able to, couldn't really justify 1,500 calories at my first meal of the day. So my habit, but I didn't want to deny myself because I also enjoy all those foods. So my habit is as soon as I order it, I ask for the takeout container, I split it in half, and I take the other half home and eat it for my lunch later in the day. So I spread it out for two meals. So that's how I get through it. But, very much if I hadn't seen these calories, I might have thought, well, maybe it's 700. I wouldn't have thought it was 1,400 or 1,500 calories. And I wouldn't have thought this has really got to be more than two meals, or it's going to be throwing me way off, way off track here in terms of my health. So at least some types of personalities respond to these kinds of signals, and I certainly did in this case. Mm-hmm. So,
and I think this reflects the issues in terms of evaluating the effectiveness, because people do change their behaviors in a variety of ways that are sometimes difficult to tease out in some of the research studies. But those kinds of anecdotes are the kinds of things that lead people to think that this would be a good policy to put in place. That's why we think it would be a good policy to put in place in Minneapolis and really evaluate it to see its effectiveness.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Next, we have Dave Siegel.
Madam Chair, if we could have Ken speak first and I could follow, would that be acceptable
to
you?
That's fine, sure.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, and please go ahead and introduce yourself and go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair, representatives. My name's Ken Shelper, and I'll start off by saying that I've
I've never participated in anything like this before, so forgive me if I stumble over protocol or anything like that. But my name, as I say, is Ken Shelper. I'm a vice president of Devani's, which is a local company some may be familiar with. We were established in 1975, and we operate 21 restaurants, a coffee shop, and a wholesale bakery in the metropolitan area. So by some of what is being discussed, we would certainly be impacted in some way by menu labeling. We employ approximately 1,100 people, have sales of about $30 million. As a company, we've established ourselves as a model employer, as measured by employee satisfaction, longevity, turnover, and pretty much any other means you want to look at. Like many small to medium-sized businesses, we are a subchapter S corporation, which means that all income and all taxes, although paid by the company, accrue to the owners personally. Historically, all of the profits of our company have been reinvested in the company, with fully a third of those being returned to the employees in benefits, bonuses, increased pay, etc. We've also established a reputation of being a good neighbor, actively supporting communities we do business with. I've been with Devani's for 33 years, basically their entire history. And prior to that, I was one of a number of people who started a local chain of health food stores and grew that company to 17 stores in Minnesota and Wisconsin. So I do have a lifelong interest in issues of health and diet. I'm a long-term member of the board of directors of the Minnesota Restaurant Association, the former president of that association. I appreciate the opportunity to try to provide some industry insight. And let me say, we start by saying we share some things in common. We are in business to serve our employees and our customers. You refer to them as constituents. As business prospers, so do our employees. We rely on these people to generate revenues. When our employees are happy, they stay. When our customers are happy, they return. And basically the same thing applies to you in terms of your constituents. Today's economy, business climate, and revenues create significant challenges for both of us in industry, you in government. The restaurant business is particularly challenging. Historically, 85% of all new restaurant startups fail within the first 5 years. Historically, restaurants operate on a very small profit margin, typically 3% or less. But we are currently in the worst environment for restaurants that we've seen in the 34 years that I've been in the business. Not only here, but nationally. Nationally, restaurant sales are down 14%. That loss of sales is more than enough to wipe out any profits. Our company lost money last year for only the second time in our history. The only other time was in a year when we changed our name for trademark purposes. Last year's loss was driven primarily by record high food costs. This year we expect results to be even worse due to the economy and loss of sales. We have tried to minimize our losses by freezing all management salaries, cutting the company 401k match, pressuring suppliers and landlords to hold or reduce prices, renegotiate leases, and cut costs anywhere we can, without affecting the quality of our products and the compensation and benefits to our employees. But obviously there are only limited things that can be done when it comes to cost cutting, and in this economic environment, we do not have the ability to raise prices. So we are caught in a catch-22. Last year, particularly over the last quarter, numerous restaurants went out of business or closed less profitable units, that, of course, resulting in lost jobs. You will see that trend continue and accelerate this year. Devani's will survive this economic downturn, but many operators are hanging on by the skin of their teeth and may not. We face many of the same challenges you do. The hospitality industry is critical to Minnesota's economy. We cannot survive and eventually resume growing businesses and jobs without government's understanding and support. The way out for both of us is a vibrant business and economic climate. And unlike many constituent groups, we do not come to state government with our hands out. We simply ask that you do not impose any increased costs on businesses, our business, through additional mandates and regulations. Doing so, even in what may seem small ways, especially in a climate like this, significantly hurts us and eventually the state as well. Let me specifically address the issue of mandatory menu nutritional labeling. While mandating that restaurants provide nutritional information may seem simple on its face, let me assure you that it is far from that. We agree that nutritional information should be available to our customers. The questions are, what information do they desire, and what's helpful to them, and what are the best means of providing that information? Other industry concerns relate to varying standards and mandates by different government jurisdictions, as well as potential liability for inaccurate information. Obesity is a legitimate health concern. However, the cure cannot be mandated by government nor solved by restaurants. Restaurants are no more at fault in this regard than our grocery stores and institutions such as our schools. In fact, the incidence of eating out has actually been declining for several years now. So if anything, restaurants are a smaller piece of the puzzle than they were. I haven't heard anybody testify that the biggest culprit isn't modern lifestyles and that it all comes down to individual choices. We at Devani's in our industry believe that information and education are part of the solution and that we have a part to play in providing information. But let me provide a few facts. Less than 10% of our customers are interested in nutritional information and use that information to guide their food decisions. For the other 90%, eating out is often a treat, and their main concerns are, does it taste good? Am I getting good service? Am I getting a good value? Most customers who are concerned about what they are eating from a nutritional standpoint do not count calories, nor do they relate to calories consumed. Approximately 90% of the customer inquiries we receive relate to ingredients, special dietary needs, and food sensitivity or allergens. Those that do have concerns related to weight and health want to know the point values of our food items, because they're on Jenny Craig or some other diet, or they want to know carbohydrates or fat content. I printed out this morning the last five inquiries, nutritional inquiries that we've gotten from our customers. And I'll keep it very short, but hello, I don't eat eggs or dairy products. Does your bread or pizzas contain either of these items? I do not eat processed meats that contain sodium nitrate and would like to know if you have ingredients. I love your pizza, but it's important that I eliminate all partially hydrogenated oil from my diet. I was wondering if you use any of that in your pizzas. So on and so forth. Those are the virtually representative of the types of requests and the types of information that people want. These are people that have special dietary needs or special reasons to be concerned. In my 33 years, we have never received one single inquiry related to calories. Yet most of the mandates enacted by municipalities around the country only require caloric information. Caloric information is incomplete and somewhat misleading. It is only one isolated nutritional measure. We've all heard the term empty calories, referring to calories that are essentially void of nutritional value. It's not the calories, it's what the nutrient value you are getting for the calories you consume. For instance, a 12-ounce Coke contains 140 calories. So does our garden salad. Does anybody think that these are nutritionally equivalent? Yet that would be what the menus would be suggesting. As was pointed out earlier, it is extremely difficult and costly to provide accurate nutritional information, especially for small and medium-sized restaurant operations. And I certainly include us in that. Mrs. McNulty actually came up with a higher figure to calculate, to have calculations done on a menu item than I did. But I do know, because we have purchased these programs, that the alternative to that is to spend somewhere between $8,000 and $20,000 on a computer program that you can use for that purpose. And that doesn't include the cost of training, the time and energy to enter recipes, publishing and updating that information, and so on. As has been pointed out, most restaurants do not have permanently set menus. Many have daily or weekly specials, and even though some menu offerings may not change, the exact ingredients or source for ingredients may frequently change, each change then necessitating a change in nutritional information and a reprinting of the menu. For us, each time we change our menu boards, our little wallet menu cards, and the menu information on our website, it costs us over $30,000. So requiring us to change our menus each time a caloric value changes could easily mandate $150,000 in additional expense a year. Those numbers may not seem like much to you, but to small and medium business owners in this environment, it may be the difference in continuing to offer health insurance to employees, or for some, even the ability to stay in business. There was some discussion earlier about the mom and pop. Well, they're exempted. And most of the references have been to McDonald's and Subway and Taco Bell and Pizza Hut, and the assumption is that they can afford it. What you may not recognize is that the vast majority of these restaurants are franchise operations. Subway, for example, has no corporately owned stores in the world. All of them are run by small business owners, subchapter S corporations just like us. Most operate one or two locations. Large ones may own 10, 15, 20. But that's a national operation, and there are more than 15 Subways. Okay? If you think for 1 minute that the ownership of Subway, Doctors Associates, Inc., is going to pony up so that their Minnesota franchises can comply with local regulations, you're wrong. Besides Devani's, local chains like Caribou Coffee, Buffalo Wild Wings, Green Mill, people like this would be financially damaged by this. Besides the cost considerations, let me use Devani's to illustrate some of the practical problems in providing nutritional information on the menu. Whether the information provided is only calories, which isn't desired or useful to most customers, or more complete nutritional information. On our menu, we offer a variety of pizzas, hot hoagie sandwiches, calzones, salads, pastas, desserts, and beverages. We make all of our food fresh to our customers' order. Nearly all of our pizzas are build-your-own, and all of our hoagies, calzones, salads, and pastas can be customized to the customer's preference. We offer a choice of 3 different pizza crusts with a fourth in test, 3 different pizza sauces, and any combination of 18 different toppings. We have 16 varieties of hoagies on your choice of 3 different breads, 6 different salads with 8 choices of dressing, and as many calzone options as we have for pizzas. We believe in catering to our customers' tastes. That's part of our brand. And they take advantage of it. Approximately 25% of our customers customize their food to their preference, be it light or heavy sauce, light or extra cheese, extra meat, no extra or light butter, oil, onions, lettuce, tomatoes, or even pepperoni on 1/4 of my pizza. And you begin to get an idea of the number of possible permutations and combinations we face, each with different nutritional values, even if you're only providing a caloric content. We have addressed these realities and our customers' need for information by creating calculators on our company's website. Our customers can check off their personal choices for any of our menu items, click the compute button, and get all of the information they need. This is the best solution for us and our customers, but all of this relates to the need for flexibility. We cannot post meaningful information on our menu boards, wallet, or wallet cards. In our industry, customer demand drives our menu. It drives the information they want from us and the ways it makes sense to provide that information for them. I tried to provide some perspective on the challenges facing Devani's in our industry and also just some of the complexities of this issue, the unseen costs, and the folly of trying to address the real need for information with what we would consider to be simplistic government regulation. Let me summarize our position regarding this issue. We don't believe we need government to dictate what information the customer wants or needs. We, more than any other business, are more in touch with our customers than any I can think of. They decide every day either to vote for us or not with their dollars. If we aren't listening to them or not responding to their needs, we go out of business. Like us, many in our industry are already providing nutritional information to our customers, but in a way that is appropriate for our individual menus. For us, menu labeling would simply create additional costs without any benefit to the consumer. If regulation is needed, then it must be consistent, uniform, and provide this flexibility. Considering the complexity of the issue, the potential financial burdens on a stressed industry and a bad economy, considering the much more immediate and pressing needs facing the state at this time, and considering that this information is already available from almost all large and medium-sized chains and that it will eventually be provided by pretty much everyone, whether as a result of customer demand or federal regulation, we would respectfully urge you to table any consideration of menu labeling legislation for the time being. Out of respect for your time, I didn't even raise many potential questions that would also need to be addressed, like, would beverages be included? If so, how about alcoholic beverages? How many varieties of mixed drinks are there? And so forth. I hope this information has been helpful, Madam Chair and Representatives, and I would be happy to address any questions that you might have.
Okay. Thank you very much for your question. Okay, Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to thank the Bonnies because you provided the caloric intake that got me through college. So it was all very good. Thank you.
Representative
thank
Gardner.
You. Thanks. Our family has been to your Arden Hills location many times and enjoy it. That's helpful for understanding how this affects people who have combinations of ingredients. And I saw that in the back of your printed testimony, there's a web page where you can kind of do the calculations on your own based on what you're ordering, and I'm going to take this home and we're going to fool around with this. But I guess it's consistency that I think a lot of consumers are looking for, and in a restaurant situation, Representative Gottwald talked about, you know, Hertzmark label, and that might work in that situation, and fast food, and you get those big wall charts where you can see what the shakes are, and at a restaurant like this, it might be something different. But I guess I'd like to know from Mr. Siegel or anybody else about any sort of industry-wide leadership for consistency. I know on beer that the beer wholesalers, when drunk driving rises up as an issue, they are really good at training wait staff and bartenders and so on with educational materials to let people know what the rules are and what the best practices are. And you know, if we had some indication that that's happening for different kinds of food locations, that would really be helpful to know.
Okay, Mr. Siegel, please introduce yourself for the record.
Will do. Thank you. My name is Dave Siegel. I'm the Executive Vice President for the Minnesota Restaurant Association. There are about 9,000 restaurants in Minnesota. We estimate that about half of those, 4,500 to 5,000, are what you would consider to be quick service or chains. And I want to make a clarification that this, what's proposed in other communities, not only impacts what we call quick service restaurants, but also impacts chain restaurants like Capital City Grill, Kincaid's, TGI Fridays, Outback Steakhouse, any chain, both quick service and full service, that has more than 15 units. So we need to think not only about menu boards, but we need to think about menus as well. So I just want to make sure we understand that that's the playing field that we're talking about. Just a couple of other points and then testimony. Our research indicates that about 76% of meals are prepared away from home. So while we certainly do have a significant portion of meals eaten at restaurants, and I would like to do a little more investigation of that figure that we heard initially in terms of percentage of calories eaten at
at quick service versus whether that includes the other type of chain restaurant. In reading that document, I just am not quite sure. So thank you very much for the opportunity to be here, and I will be brief with my testimony. As Ken indicated, the National Restaurant Association recognizes that consumers have begun to ask for this information, that eventually we suspect that this will be demanded across the country. And so the National Restaurant Association has joined with many other organizations and with many of the major chains, in fact, virtually all the major chains, to put together some national legislation and form a coalition that addresses this issue across state boundaries and addresses it at the federal level. The coalition is called CRNI, the Coalition for Responsible Nutrition Information. There's a website. And we understand with America's growing obesity problem that it's important for consumers to have good information. The CRNI members are committed to providing that information in an easy and convenient way to customers when they want it, and we believe the best way to do that is through national standards. One proven example that was referenced before are grocery stores, and that's what's known as the Nutrition Labeling Education Act, NLEA, passed about 10, 12 years ago. And that's the label that you see in the grocery store when you pick up a food item. And there's a consistency across city boundaries, state boundaries, across the country. So the consumer, no matter where they are, where they're eating, where they're shopping, understands what those labels mean. We would support an initiative like this, and in fact are doing so. Because NLEA is widely regarded as successful, the industry has come forward with a concept for menu labeling, and we call it the Labeling Education and Nutrition Act, LEAN. And you will see LEAN referenced in about a week and a half at the federal level. It's been introduced once, didn't move. We suspect with the new Congress and the new president that the Labeling Education and Nutrition Act has a pretty substantial chance of passage. So LEAN is not a stall tactic. It's a legitimate effort by the industry to address this issue and do so in a way that is uniform and that provides consistency for consumers across the country. The bill would provide more than just caloric information. It would include calories, total fat, cholesterol, total carbohydrates, dietary fiber, calories from fat, saturated fat, sodium, sugars, and protein. And the information would be provided to consumers in writing at the point of sale. Further, the bill provides legal safeguards known as safe harbor in the event that there were inadvertent errors in the information provided or the suppliers or manufacturers changed out products unbeknownst to the restaurant. The National Association is also working on a program that would help small operators compile the necessary information. We do believe that with the current makeup of Congress and our new president that this does stand a very good chance of passage. In closing, if nutritional information is to be mandated, we feel strongly that federal legislation would provide the consistency with what is currently required in packaged retail foods, and it would be uniform across jurisdictions. Now, operators like Ken and major chains across the country are happy to comply with those consistent regulations, but a patchwork of regulations for cities, counties, and states in which they do business is really an untenable solution. Further, we're happy to provide even more information than simply caloric content. We ask for greater and realistic flexibility in providing that information at point of sale. So we commend you for researching the issue, for gathering information, for doing your due diligence on the issue, and we would ask that the state and any municipalities in Minnesota allow the federal LEAN Act to progress, because we do consider its passage very possible, and we think that's the best solution that we can provide to consumers and to the industry at this time. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Siegel. Are there questions from members or comments? Okay, Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question for Mr. Shelfer.
Yes.
With only a 3% profit margin, it's just logical to assume that if you had to incur these charges, they would simply have to be passed on down to consumer, wouldn't it? Wouldn't we just see an increase across your menu?
Madam Chair, Representative, there really aren't any other options. Unfortunately, you know as well as I do that what's happening with consumers and their dollars right now. Mm-hmm. Just looking at the most recent figures, we're seeing our delivery business down 25%. We've surveyed our delivery customers, and they are simply getting more food, avoiding restaurants and cutting back in that way. They're buying food in grocery stores and taking it home. In this environment, as I said, it is virtually untenable for us to raise prices and not have our business suffer. So you can take it from one side, but it's just going to kick you on the other.
Okay.
Thanks for the question.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. If there are no other questions, we're going to move on. We have Buzz Anderson from the Minnesota Retailers Association. Thank you very much for your testimony today. And we do need to be out of here right on time at 4:15. So, Mr. Anderson, I'm going to ask you to keep that in mind because we do have one other testifier. So, thank you. Please introduce yourself. Welcome to committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Buzz Anderson. I represent the Minnesota Retailers Association, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to you and the committee today. My testimony has a lot of what has been said prior to this, so I'm going to jump around a bit. It may seem a little choppy, but I want to try to reduce the length of my testimony. Many of my members are small business people, and they operate stores all over Minnesota, including many in communities in which you live. Many of these small business people run franchise operations we often refer to as quick service restaurants. My memberships include a lot of those type of people, including Wendy's, McDonald's, Taco Bell, KFC, Pizza Hut, and others. Combined in my membership, there's over 1,000 of those types of quick service restaurants located in Minnesota. It may be greater than that, but that was just a quick look, first time at that. These food retailers, like many other people in the marketplace, are very, very receptive, and they notice very keenly what consumers want. They know that consumers vote every single day with their pocketbooks, and with their pocketbooks, they make decisions about purchasing choices. They began to notice a significant trend towards health consciousness more than a decade ago, and many of them already a decade ago started providing nutritional information because they sensed that people wanted more nutritious food. One of my members was really leading the way, and they noticed that several years ago people seemed to have less of a taste for fast food. So they began adding to their menus salads, fruit dips with fruit, granola with yogurt, and guess what? Those have become big profit centers for those restaurants. They also decided that it was really important that customers get as much information as they can get. Some of them started hanging information on wall boards, but because they change menus so much, and that seems to be a preference of consumers, they found it difficult to keep changing these wall boards, so they started handing out the brochures at customer requests. I can assure you that if you gave everybody who bought something in a quick service restaurant a brochure, the parking lot would be riddled with brochures. So we only give the people that ask for them. And I'll give you an example because I stopped at a quick service restaurant today. If I could have help from the sergeant, I picked up a menu label that comes from a well-known quick service restaurant. And you'll see it has a great deal of information related to the nutritional content as well as the calories. Well, needless to say, this has continued to evolve because, again, quick service restaurant owners know that this is something consumers want. The good news is that today every one of my quick service restaurant members provides information to consumers both online and in person. So there isn't one that you can't go to where you can't get this information. And it'll be just like the information that you're getting. It's very, very, very detailed. Efforts to create this information, as Mr. Siegel mentioned, have reached the national level. And we supported legislation, the Lean Act that he talked about last year in Congress, and we support it again this year because many of my members have restaurants throughout the country, and to try to follow menu labeling requirements in all different kinds of jurisdictions is extremely costly. And it causes a potential for more mistakes if you're trying to give proper and correct information to consumers. So what's the bad news about calorie menu labeling? Well, it's very confusing to customers. For example, a sandwich with 5 items, meat, bun, cheese, lettuce, and tomato, can be ordered 120 different ways. Now, we'll make it your way, But don't ask us to try to explain to you how many calories are in the way that you could, that you might want it. A typical quick service restaurant combination meal can range anywhere from 335 to 800 calories. I might tell you that as well that many years ago when I was in college, I worked at a Pizza Hut restaurant, and I was shocked at the different combinations that people ordered, including pizza with no sauce on it. I thought I'd seen everything until that. But anyway, we want to make what people, and we want to make and sell what people want. Now, menu boards with calorie counts are also very costly to business. Some companies change their menus seasonally and regionally. So that means you need to have your calorie counts correct. You need to have your menu information correct. You have to make sure that your suppliers are providing you the products to your specifications so that your calorie information is correct. It's not just a simple thing to do. It's a very complicated thing to do. All of these quick service restaurants I mentioned have removed trans fats. Well, in order to do that in 20,000 McDonald's restaurants around the country was a mammoth task, because the next best alternative can be very expensive and may not be available. So that took some time to transition. So, you know, it's just not as simple as it might seem from the outside. Menu labeling also takes a lot of space. You've been in a quick service restaurant lately? Have you tried to pick out something other than items 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 and just look for the one thing that you want? Good luck if we have to add all this information. You know, there'll be nothing in the restaurant except, you know, the menu board with the calorie count. So my point is, it takes a great deal of space. As you might guess, space is at a great premium in the restaurant business. People figure their property taxes by the square foot. So this space is all very, very precious. New requirements, regulatory requirements, also put the restaurant business in harm's way from an economic standpoint. And you all want us to hire more people. You all want us to sell more things that are taxable and collect more sales tax, for which we get no remuneration, as is in the case of other states. Sorry, I had to put in that commercial. You want us to buy stuff from local vendors so that we can help spur local economies as well. We do all of that. But we can't do that if we're challenged economically. So I would ask you to use your patience. Help us to continue to do what we do, which we think is the right thing. Help us support the Lean Act in Congress so there is one consistent national standard across the country. And with that, I'll stop and ask if there are any questions.
Okay, thank you. Members? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, we do have one question. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, it's a comment. Having, in another role of mine, I serve on the Food Marketing Institute Communications Board out of Washington, and there's a lot of discussion now about nutrition labeling, but even with industry groups getting together, there are still four or five variations on this, and none of them can agree on just which one. All of them are taking different approaches to trying to respond to what consumers will find useful in trying to make nutritional decisions, but there's no consensus even at that point. But I would point out, too, in the testimony, it's interesting to note that McDonald's changed from trans fat to non-trans fat on their own. I don't think the government mandated them to do that. They responded to consumer pressure. So.
Thank you, Representative Gottwald. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, Thomas Tutsky. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Thomas E. Kotsky. I live at 571 Otis Avenue in St. Paul. I've been a physician since 1974, and I was awarded the degree of Master of Science in Public Health from the University of North Carolina in 1978. I practiced cardiology for 17 years at Mayo Clinic Rochester. I am currently Medical Director for Evidence-Based Health at Health Partners in the metro area, and I practice cardiology with Health Partners Medical Group. I appreciate the opportunity to offer data and opinions related to the critical importance of calorie labeling as a health-promoting policy. Every day in my practice of cardiology, I see patients who are the victims of excessive calorie intake. Nearly none of my patients are ideal weight, and more than half of them are obese. Many of them, because of their obesity or orthopedic problems generated by their obesity, are literally trapped in their own bodies. The current crisis in healthcare funding is due in part to this excessive calorie intake. In our 2000 paper, Obesity, Another Wolf at the Door, we describe how the obesity epidemic could make us poor by diverting dollars from consumer goods and other sectors to healthcare. This diversion would result in fewer resources to cover healthcare needs for individuals employed in these sectors. I think we can see this happening right now. My patients have a choice between eating out and buying their medication. They buy their medication, there's fewer dollars to pay for health care by people employed in the restaurant industry. The economic spiral would be ever downward. In a very recent paper published in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine, we compared the potential impact of preventive strategies to treatment strategies for acute heart disease events. If everyone were to meet dietary guidelines and get adequate intakes of omega-3 fatty acids, the number of deaths prevented or postponed through nutrition would be twice as great as the impact of perfecting care for acute cardiac events. We cannot buy our way out of this crisis, and we cannot treat our way out of this crisis. We must act our way out. We must find a solution to the obesity epidemic and the crisis of chronic disease. Everyone must eat, so we might as well enable them to eat a healthy diet. I do have hope, however. I have worked on chronic disease prevention projects with the Director General of the National Institute of Public Health and Welfare in Finland since 1973. In that time, we have seen a decline in death rates from heart disease of about 85% and a decrease in total mortality rates of about 50%.
Excuse me, Dr. Kotke, do have the handout, even though we weren't able to upload it to the system, apparently, but members do have the handout in front of them, so if you wanted to refer to that, it would be helpful. And while we're at it, if you could just raise your mic a little bit, too, so we get a little bit better sound quality.
Okay.
Thank you.
These changes have resulted in an increase in life expectancy of 10 years for Finnish men and nearly 10 years for Finnish women. If you do the math, this is an increase of about 4 months per year, year after year. The largest single component responsible for the decline in heart disease death rates is a decline in serum cholesterol levels resulting from changes in diet. The changes in diet are the result of both broad educational interventions and food policy changes. I bring these facts to your attention solely to point out that when a group of people sets their minds to a task, they can produce large improvements in health status in a relatively short period of time. Our peer-reviewed data from Olmsted County, Minnesota, indicate that Minnesotans do not like to be fat. On population surveys, 85% of women and 73% of men reported that they are trying to either lose weight or not gain weight. But how can we expect them to be successful when they have little or no idea of the calorie content of the foods that they are eating? Lisa Harnack and Simone French, both at the University of Minnesota School of Public Health, have recently published a review of the literature on the effect of point-of-purchase calorie labeling on restaurant and cafeteria food choices. Six studies were identified that met their selection criteria for their review. Five of the six studies suggested that menu labeling for calories might generate a reduction in caloric intake of 5 to 50 calories per meal. While these changes might seem quite small, I would point out that a reduction of 10 calories per day, every day of the year, could be calculated to result in a 1 pound weight loss per year. And this is about what Americans are gaining per year, so it would offset the obesity epidemic. As others have pointed out, menu labeling is not a novel technique with unknown effects. When I was director of Cardi Vision 2020 in Olmsted County, our Eat with the Runner menu labeling program was one of our most popular innovations. I would also like to draw your attention to the map. Excuse me if I backtrack a moment. This current graphic is the reduction in all-cause mortality in North Australian men in Finland. This is an example as seen in all groups. About a 50% decline in all-cause mortality over a 25-year period. Whoops, this time. 70% in all cardiovascular, more than 70% coronary heart disease. Lung cancer's down, all cancer's down. And the resulting increase in life expectancy in Finnish men between 1971 and 2007 was 10 years. In women, it was about 8 years. The gold bar is the attributable benefit from cholesterol lowering. And this is the current map from Mary Story, indicating areas where menu labeling policies have been either considered or inactive. I would be surprised if anyone in this room believed that calorie labeling is a panacea that well offset the obesity epidemic and the resulting epidemic of diabetes. I, for one, don't believe that there is a single intervention that has the properties of a silver bullet. However, I do believe that, as has been demonstrated in Finland, with multifaceted policy changes and educational programs that persist over time, Minnesotans can successfully confront and overcome this epidemic that threatens our economy and threatens our way of life. Calorie labeling is one component of that multifaceted strategy. Thank you for your time and your consideration of this important initiative.
All right, thank you very much. We have some questions. I saw Representative Gardner.
Thanks for your testimony, Doctor. You say in your testimony that changes in diet, this is in Finland, are the result of broad educational interventions and food policy changes. Were any of those interventions or changes, did that include nutritional labeling?
They did change nutritional labeling and also the availability of foods. Certain foods were made more available.
But was there anything about caloric intake?
I don't
labeling.
I don't know specifically about that, but I think the take-home message is that we're faced with a situation where healthcare is sucking money out of the rest of the economy. This will not turn around. In fact, it will get worse because if people have less money to spend, they neglect preventive services and they become sicker and they have less money to spend. And so we need to come up with a solution. And so I don't think we need to look at specifically what Finns did, but that the take-home message is you can have very large changes in disease experience when you set your mind to changing behavior.
Thanks. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Doctor, thank you also for your testimony and for your work to try to curb obesity. I agree with you. I think it's an epidemic in our society. It's costing us in so many ways other than financial and otherwise. Does your research suggest that menu labeling in and of itself reduces obesity?
I think there is some evidence. It's conflicting, like the gentleman to my left noted. His indifference to labeling, there's a significant proportion of the population that is simply indifferent to labeling. They don't dine out. They don't buy on the basis of calories. They buy on the basis of taste, convenience, those kind of things. But there's also a segment of the population that's interested in it. And I think that it's like red shirts or blue shirts or whatever. One size doesn't fit all. It's a partial solution. There's no single solution to the problem we're facing.
Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, I would just point out, you know, there is a lot of information out there about what's healthy to eat and what's not healthy to eat. And, you know, a lot of this is really behavior-driven. Information is a good thing to have to make decisions about behavior, but there's a lot of information out there about how we can eat healthier. And the question really becomes, how do we adopt that information and make it our own in living a healthier lifestyle. both consuming less and better calories and exercise.
Right, and it's where that information is available, and a point of purchase is important. And then I think, you know, as a community, I'd like us to be prosperous because modern medicine requires a prosperous community. I mean, your prosperity is my prosperity, and we need to find a joint solution to this problem, or it will literally eat our lunch.
Okay, we have three more members on the list here, Rude, Murphy, then Huntley. Representative Rude.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dr. Tucci. In your testimony, you referenced this Eat with a Runner menu labeling program.
Yeah.
Could you just mention, give us a brief?
Sure. It was a program, it was a voluntary program in Rochester, in Olmsted County. Restaurant tours would submit items for analysis. We would do the analysis, met certain caloric, calorie, sodium, saturated fat. There'd be a little labeling. I think one of the gentlemen to my right brought up voluntary programs like this, and then there would be a sign on the door that said Eat with the Runner, and people could identify those entrees that were, I think they were less than 500 calories, or maybe it was 1,000 calories. I don't recall exactly. It was very popular.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Murphy.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and welcome, Dr. Tucci.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if you are familiar at all with federal legislation that a previous testifier was making reference to, and if so, if you have reactions to it.
I'm not familiar with it, so I will say I don't have a reaction.
Representative Huntley.
Well, Madam Chair, this is more of a comment, but I'm a little bit familiar with the Karelian study, spending most of my life with a bunch of Finlanders in northern Minnesota. I mean, this is probably the most dramatic study in public health improvement that anyone has ever seen, except for cleaning the drinking water and doing immunizations. There's nothing that's ever come this close. And if you look at the lifespan for men there, the average one died at 65.9, and that probably means a big chunk of them were sick for the time they were 55 on, and we're not much for producing for the economy. And there's a number of national studies that in this country that say for every extra year you get in the workforce, it's worth $100,000 to the economy. And that's part of medicine that we never look at when we look at the cost of medicine or the cost of public health. We don't talk about the benefits to the economy. So, but this is a really the most dramatic thing. Other than treating drinking water and doing immunizations that I think has ever been done.
All right. Thank you, Representative Huntley. Representative Lauper.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm impressed by the Karelian study, but I'm not surrounded by quite as many Finlanders, so I haven't read it before. And I'm wondering, Dr. Kotke, if you could tell us a little bit about what the broad educational interventions that they used were. Was this focused at a particular ages? Was it community-based? Was it all ages?
Well, it was all ages, and both community-based and health services-based. And basically, you could sum it up as the motto is we participate. I mean, the idea, rather than separating out sick and non-sick, risk, not at risk, it was a comprehensive community effort that said, we're in this together. Whether we're grocers, restaurateurs, doctors, mechanics, whatever, we're in this together. Sickest men in the world, healthiest babies in the world, sickest men in the world. Start asking men in their 30s if they have angina, chest pain. They either say yes or not yet. You know, paradoxically, you know, I don't recall a patient I've ever had who has been surprised when I tell them they're going to need an angiogram and a bypass. We also expect to get heart disease. We don't have to do that. But it was really comprehensive. There were school based programs. There were cooking schools for the women were the cooks at that time. Then they'd get the families back together and eat the new meals. There were changes in food availability. In fact, converted, because Europe has a glut of butter, they converted from dairy farming to berry farming, and it fit the Finnish community very well, and so that it seemed very profitable to raise berries instead of cows. New products. Back in 73, you can buy less than 3% milk, 3% fat milk in a grocery store. Those kind of things. And so and working actually hand in glove with food suppliers to develop new products. And it took a long time. I mean, it's been 35 years, but now Finns live longer than Americans. Which is it's a flip.
All right. If there are no other questions, any closing comment, Dr. Kaski? And
I think we really ought to see this as this is a community problem, and even though I'm a doctor, I mean, I know that the worst case for a doctor is a charity patient, and I don't want to go that way, you know. And the worst case for the grocers, the restaurateurs, the whatever, is the patient who's making that choice between their medication and dining out or buying food. And I don't want to go there. I think we have a sense of urgency. We have to address this. We can't adopting a position that says this is just too hard to figure out that well, eat our lunch. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, members. We are adjourned.